day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Transition Reports conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, please press star then zero on your touchtone telephone. I'd now like to introduce your host, Mr. Jeff Levy. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you, and thank you all for joining us today for the release of our new Blueprint for a Healthier America, modernizing the federal public health system to focus on prevention and preparedness. The Blueprint is a set of recommendations for the next president and Congress on ways to improve the health of Americans. We undertook this project because America's public health system is broken. The system is chronically underfunded and outdated. Americans are not as healthy as they could be or should be. Tens of millions of us suffer from preventable diseases, and major vulnerabilities exist in our ability to respond to major health emergencies. We believe Americans deserve better. Instead, Americans spend more than any other country on health care, more than $2 trillion annually, but we're not as healthy as most other industrialized nations. This high spending makes us less productive and places us at a competitive disadvantage. One key reason is that we focus on treating people only after they become sick instead of focusing on prevention. To develop our recommendations, we convened more than 150 leading experts through a year-long consensus-building process. We concentrated on looking for concrete things that could be done by the federal government to do a better job of preventing disease, preparing for disasters, and bringing down healthcare costs by keeping people healthier. I'd like to thank Al Quinlan, president of Greenberg Quinlan Rosner Research, and Bill McInturf, partner and co-founder of Public Opinion Strategies, for being part of the call today. We've worked with both public opinion firms over the last 5 years to learn more about what the public thinks and cares around health issues. Today, they're going to talk about the latest set of research we did this year and trends that they have been seeing. I'd like to start by asking Al and Bill to review some of the major health concerns we've heard from Americans and what people think the role of government should be in addressing these issues, and then I'll go through some of our recommendations and then open the call for questions. Al, do you want to start?
Yes. Hi, this is Al Quinlan. I'm going to begin, and Bill McInturf with Public Opinion Strategies is going to chime in. Let me first say that the research, the research we are reporting on today was conducted in May and June of this year. We conducted 8 focus groups in the Northeast, Southeast, Southwest, and Midwest. And that was followed by a nationwide survey of just over 1,000 Americans. The people look at public health. They really look at it in two different ways. They look at natural disasters as one set of public health issues, and diseases and nutrition and prevention as another set of health issues. And I want to start by talking about natural disasters. I want to make a few points here. The first is there is a deep sense that we will again have natural disasters that are similar to what we've had in the past in recent years. When we ask people how likely do they think certain events are to happen, 97% of Americans think we will have a major hurricane or major tornado, major natural disaster that will create many problems. And as we saw, we already had this happen this fall in Houston. So people are very, very – 97% think it's likely to happen. 81%, a very – 8 out of 10 Americans say it's very likely to happen. So there is a deep sense that natural disasters are coming. They're going to continue to happen, and we need to prepare for them. Now, when we ask people – what's interesting is when we ask people in focus groups and in the surveys if they are confident that we are prepared – for them, the general inclination is to say, yes, we're prepared. But when we burrow down and we ask people, well, how strongly do you feel that way? Do you feel as though we're really very prepared or we're somewhat prepared for a natural disaster? About 66%, 2 out of 3 say we're prepared, but almost all of them, 51% of that 66%, say we're somewhat prepared, but we're perhaps not as prepared as we should be. Only 15% of the public, I mean, this is interesting, say that we are very prepared for a natural disaster. So there is a sense that I think the public's view on these big potential disasters is, in the back of their minds, they are sort of hoping that government is ready and thinking that they should be ready, but they're not really sure. And they believe it's very, very important. When we ask people how important is it for government to prepare for these things, a large majority said we need to prepare, you know, seriously for these disasters that are going to come. Now, when we go through, when we went through the survey and through the focus groups and we introduced information to people and we told them that, you know, even since Hurricane Katrina, many cities and communities do not have the supplies, the plans they need to deal with, you know, a natural disaster like a hurricane or a major tornado. 82%, the vast majority in the poll, and almost everyone in our focus group said, wait a second, that's a serious concern. We should do something about it. So I'll leave the point on natural disasters by saying there is a there's a sense that it's going to happen. There's a what I call a soft confidence in government that we're prepared, a very strong feeling that we need to be prepared given that it is going to happen. And then once people become more familiar with what the situation is, they realize we've got to do more. At the conclusion of the focus groups, the discussions had turned almost entirely to, well, we've got to start doing some more. We've got to prepare for these situations. And I would make the case, make the argument that since what took place in the Gulf this fall, these are likely to have been elevated a little bit, particularly in those parts of the country. Now, the second area I want to talk about is what is health nutrition, and there are a couple things here that I think are most important. The first is there's been a major change in people's perception of health care. And some of the issues, particularly child obesity, which I'm going to go into in a minute, and the elevated importance of keeping people healthy, of preventing illnesses and preventing diseases and preventing health problems in the first place. And part of this is qualitative. I can say that I've done focus groups for 20 years. Bill's done them even longer, I think. And I have not sat through focus groups where issues like child obesity and these health issues came to the fore and were discussed in a way in the way that they were in these focus groups as something that we've got to begin to take steps to prevent and to do something about. We asked a question. What's interesting is we asked people about prevention. You know, who's responsible for prevention? And what's clear is there are three entities that are responsible. It's seen as a partnership. The individual is obviously the most important. The individual is seen as being the most important, most responsible for their health care. Businesses, employers are seen as being partially responsible, but government has a role. Government is seen as not in a light of needing to tell people what to do, of telling people what to do, but of helping make healthy choices and options available to people who otherwise would not have those choices or have those options, particularly children. And when we asked people a core question in the survey. You know, we asked them, which statement do you agree with? Do you agree with that we should invest in helping people to prevent diseases and stay healthier, that it'll save money on healthcare costs in the long run? Or do you believe that investing in them is something that we can't really afford right now? It's going to cost too much, and people are going to make their own healthcare decisions anyway. The public came down on the side of investing in helping people prevent diseases and stay healthier now that will save money in the long run by a 63-32% margin over the notion of letting it go, letting people make their own decisions, and we can't really afford it. So there was a strong sense that we investing in prevention and helping people be healthy is a strategy for the future that is very, very important. And nowhere is this more evident than in child obesity. The obesity issue generally, which just comes up in any focus group discussion of healthcare issues, it comes up very quickly and becomes a big discussion. But child obesity, what's interesting is when we ask people a series of healthcare issues and public health issues over time, we've asked these questions for the last 3-4 years. Child obesity was the one that had grown in importance over the course of the last 3-4 years by the largest figure. And now almost 2 out of 3, 63% said it's a very important priority. And that went up about 9 percentage points just since 2006 in a year and a half. it's more important than ever. It's not something that is news to people. Again, I go back to the focus groups. People know it. They see it every day. They believe it's a very, very big issue already. It's not something that people really need to be educated on. And when we ask people, how concerned are you about it, 81% said they were very concerned about it. It was something that bothered people, that worried 8 out of 10 Americans. And when we went through the course of the survey and the discussions in the focus groups, it was very clear that people want to see public. They believe the families and parents are ultimately responsible for this, and the children themselves. But they also want to see public investment and public decisions made that help kids and help children and adults become, not have to deal with obesity and not become obese. Large majorities support the notion of healthy school lunches and taking junk food out of school, 69%, and 62%, almost 2 out of 3, support the notion of more and expanded physical PE, of physical education classes for kids. So I'm going to conclude here and let Bill chime in here with what he'd like to say. But the child obesity and healthcare and that particular healthcare issue is a huge concern in the public now. It's something that the public thinks we can and should do something about. They believe there are societal forces working against us on that, with kids on computers and TV and all these various options they have that don't involve going outside and playing, and so they're looking for a public-private partnership on that to help families have good choices for their kids and also have options, particularly in schools and in communities that enable kids to stay healthy and prevent future diseases. I'll turn it over to Bill. Would you like to add?
Well, just briefly, Al's done a really good, thorough job. I think when I do a report, I try to think, what did I learn? What helped me learn about this issue? And I think what struck me was, again, learning to talk to Americans about things that touch their life in terms of increasing salience. So talking with our client here, if we talk about emergency preparedness, let's talk about food safety, antibiotic resistance, and hospital capacity, even before natural disasters, because people see the clear connection. I think Al's done a very effective job talking about major health issues, meaning obesity, childhood obesity. It is powerful, and it crosses our normal kind of things, and we get a really strong reaction. There's people saying, yep, you're right, there's a public health issue. Even stronger, and right behind that, issues like diabetes and heart disease. I also was really struck that, sometimes our people tend to want to do a doom and gloom, everything's terrible, as a way to inject public concern or action. I think on these two issues, what we learned was there was a limit to doom and gloom, and that we had to, and in fact, people were anxious to hear about what our client was proposing for solutions and were very responsive. I thought the third thing was in terms of the kind of the battle for attention and funding, that the more we talked about longer-term goals, were what was realistic to achieve over a 3- or 5- or 8-year period, support for these efforts went up as people saw that longer-term as something that would be helpful. And then I just was reminded at the end about the challenge, and especially I think in the new era after September, the challenge for funding, where these issues will have to kind of fight for they're part of the pie in what could be a difficult environment in Washington, and that the lessons that we learned about personal connection, about what issues touch most people's lives, talking about solutions, talking about something that could be done over 3 to 5 years to address this stuff are all things that dramatically shifted the dialogue for people to see these as a more personal connection, more salient, and something they'd like to see more government action. And then lastly, as the Republican on the call, I would say these are issues where the normal partisan breaks between government and no government get very fuzzy, and people clearly put this in the province of government, where the government clearly in their mind has to have a role, a significant role to address these issues. And so, Al, those are just, you know, the two or three or four things that struck me that I thought were compelling about the data.
Okay. Well, thank you both, Al and Bill. And I guess that what you just said, Bill, says we need to start talking about what are some of these specific solutions. I think it's clear from what Al and Bill have said that Americans believe the government has a major role to play in keeping Americans safe from major threats, things that are largely beyond our individual control, like natural disasters and bioterrorism, and also that Americans feel the government has a role in making healthy choices easier choices through things like providing healthier lunches for kids at school or making sure we have safe, accessible places to engage in physical activity in our communities. I'd also like to point out that both major candidates for president recognized the importance of public health and prevention. Both candidates had commentaries in a recent issue of the New England Journal of Medicine. Senator McCain said, and this is a quote, "We need to create a next generation of efforts to prevent chronic disease, early intervention programs, new treatment models, and public health infrastructure." And Senator Obama committed to, again, a quote, new funding available for community-based programs aimed at priority public health problems such as smoking and obesity, and to work with state and local governments to create a coherent, coordinated national public health strategy. The blueprint we're releasing today provides guidance to the next administration and Congress on how to implement these commitments, providing concrete steps the federal government can take to help make it easier for Americans to live healthier lives and to ensure that they will be protected during emergencies. Some of our top recommendations include: we need a national health and prevention strategy that sets realistic short- and long-term health goals for the country, focusing on big-picture health problems like the obesity epidemic. From the White House down, we need to recognize that every agency of the government and every sector of society has a role to play in keeping Americans healthy, and a national strategy is the starting point for creating a national movement for health. We deliberately called this a national strategy rather than a federal strategy, recognizing that there is a role for both the public sector and the private sector, and it is not just the federal government that needs to take a lead, but state and local governments have a critical role as well. Once we have appropriate goals, we need to ensure better accountability. We should have an independent, science-driven national public health board that holds the government accountable for implementation of the national strategy. And the federal government should also hold grantees accountable for improving health outcomes in exchange for an increased investment of taxpayer dollars in public health. Disease prevention needs to be a cornerstone of the upcoming health care reform efforts and not an afterthought. We'll never contain costs until we keep Americans healthier. In fact, without a commitment to prevention, we won't be able to afford health reform. And there's a series of specific recommendations and principles around health reform in the blueprint. We also need to improve our emergency public health preparedness capabilities. The next administration should finally take on the lingering problem of jurisdiction and define clear roles and responsibilities for responding to health emergencies. Right now, there are too many overlapping, competing, and unattended functions. And again, in the details of the blueprint, we have some specific issues that need to be addressed. The next administration must also tackle how to provide care for Americans during emergencies, surge capacity issues, meaning how do we help hospitals and healthcare providers who may be overrun during emergencies build a capacity to respond to that surge. This remains the single biggest, hardest, and unresolved issue for public health preparedness. The government also needs to address the public health workforce shortage. Unless we can recruit the next generation of experts to fill government public health jobs, we're all going to be left at risk. Now, I know what all of you are thinking. How are we going to pay for these recommendations? We worked with the New York Academy of Medicine to determine how much it would cost to provide the basic level of public health services to Americans that we all believe is important. and we convened an expert panel that concluded that there is currently a $20 billion shortfall. This is combined in federal, state, and local government spending on an annual basis. Let me repeat, this is a shortfall of what it would take to provide basic services to protect Americans.
But how much is that?
$20 billion is the estimate. So $20 billion doesn't sound like a big number, as big a number as it did a couple of months ago, but we know this is a lot of money. Breaking down that $20 billion shortfall number, reflecting the current ratios of spending between the federal government and state and local governments, $12 billion should come from federal support and $8 billion from state and local support. I'd also like to point out, just to put this in perspective, that we need $1 billion of this funding simply to restore the budget of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to the level of funding it received in fiscal year 2005, adjusted for inflation. Now, we know this money isn't going to be available overnight, and we also know that the money couldn't be absorbed by the system overnight. And so realistically, we believe the additional funding should be phased in over a period of 4 to 5 years. We've heard for years about the potential of prevention, but we could keep people healthier and save in healthcare costs. But as a country, we haven't made the investments needed to have the payoff. Given the current economic climate, it's time to finally focus on the root of the problem instead of always trying to fix things after it's too late. The blueprint looks at a range of possible funding mechanisms to create a stable, reliable system to pay for funding public health. One option we propose is creation of a wellness trust, which would be an independent agency to ensure every American has access to proven clinical and community-based disease prevention services, regardless of a person's insurance status. The trust could be funded by tapping the insurers who would financially benefit from keeping people healthier, including private insurers, Medicare, and Medicaid. If anyone is interested in the other options that we put forward, I'd be happy to go over those more in the question and answer period. To help illustrate the potential savings that could be realized by investing in prevention, Trust for America's Health recently released a report where we found that an investment of $10 per person in community-based programs to improve physical activity, good nutrition, and smoking prevention, through those kinds of interventions, we could save more than $16 billion annually per year within 5 years. This would be a return of investment of $5.60 for every dollar investment, and we could significantly reduce type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, and heart disease in the process. So while this increased investment in public health sounds large, we would see a return on that investment, and particularly when we focus on some of these community-based prevention activities, we could be dramatically affecting health care costs in the process and possibly making health reform more affordable. Modernizing public health is urgently needed to protect and improve the health of Americans. Prevention and preparedness are vital to the well-being of families and communities, but they are also vital to workplace productivity and U.S. economic competitiveness. As a country, we're falling behind as Americans become more unhealthy and unproductive, and healthcare costs are skyrocketing. So we hope the next president, the next administration, and the next Congress will take a serious look at these recommendations and invest in protecting the future health and wealth of America. With that, I think we'd like to open up to questions, and Al and Bill are also going to be available to answer some questions as well. So, operator, if you'd give folks instructions, that would be helpful.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Again, if you have a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. Our first question comes from Megan McCarthy from Congressional Quarterly. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for having us today. My question is about, I know you referenced OECD countries when analyzing, you know, how much these countries are typically spending on healthcare. Is there an example of a developed country that has put a significant investment into preventative care, and what kind of results have they had?
I'm not sure that, you know, given the way data are collected, I'm not sure we can make a direct comparison in the way that you're asking. However, there are two, as you'll see in the details of the report in the financing section,
mm-hmm.
One of the ways we arrived at this $20 billion increase through two methods. One was to look at a methodology used in Washington State that they used to estimate what per capita spending ought to be to have an adequate public health system. And then we applied that on a national basis and found that actually it would take an extra $20 billion of government spending to achieve that. But the other method that we used was comparing the public health and level of public health investment in as a proportion of national health expenditures in other OECD countries and as compared to the United States. And if we reached that similar level, which I believe is a 1% or 2% increase in our public health spending as a portion of national health expenditures, we would also need about another $20 billion. The specific arithmetic is actually in the text of the blueprint. So in a sense, we arrived at that $20 billion figure by comparing the level of public health investment in those countries to ours.
I guess my question is, though, is there a big example of a country that has put a lot of money into preventative care?
Well, I think my answer is almost all of the other OECD countries have a larger investment in prevention, and that became the basis for our estimate of needing additional spending in public health.
Okay.
And we also see that the healthcare costs in those countries are lower. Is that the only reason that they are lower? Probably not. Is it a contributing factor? I would argue yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. Our next question comes from Torney Smith from Spokane Regional Health. Your line is open.
Good morning. I'm curious how all of local public health agencies can utilize this report that you will be putting out to become more effective in influencing congressional leaders to focus on its content.
Well, I actually would argue that there's a good deal of interest in Congress right now in looking at health, looking at prevention, looking at how it relates to health reform, and so I think it's important to hear from people in the communities about what works, what doesn't work, and that there is an effort to that there are good interventions out there that can make a difference. But I'd actually turn it over maybe to Bill or Al to say, I think the part of the message that needs to be heard from the polling data is I think there's sometimes a wariness about whether the public really believes there is a government role in this. And I think on the preparedness side, there is very strong support for a strong government role. And on the prevention, the traditional prevention of disease side, I think a recognition of an important public role, but a public role as something of a leader that helps people make the right decisions and provides the environment that makes it easier for people to make the right decisions. Bill or Al, do you have something to add to that?
Well, I would just second what you said. I won't add too much, but what the public seems to believe, I think, in terms of preventative health and nutrition and healthy behavior is that if left entirely to the private sector, the choices may not be there for people. In other words, they may not, they'll have fast food options and they'll have junk food in the schools and they'll have all sorts of bad options, but that government, there's a role for government to play that to incentivize and also help provide options and choices for people to behave more healthier. In other words, make it more manageable for them. And as Jeff said on the natural disasters and particularly as Bill mentioned, food safety, there is a strong yearning for a very vigorous government role in protecting the public. And I will just mention one other thing that Bill talked about, food safety. This is an area where the public, I think, believes that regulations and the government role is actually greater than it actually is in some instances with regards to antibiotics and various things. And they're looking for a very, very vigorous, active public role on the part of government.
And if you look on page 53 of the blueprint, you will see three pages of recommendations related to food safety, including what needs to happen at the federal level in terms of making for a more rational approach to food safety, as well as support that needs to go out to state and local governments to address those issues.
Could I ask you a follow-up question?
Sure.
My experience in Washington State is that there has been a lot of lip service paid by our elected officials in support of public health, but when it comes to the competition between do you fund public health or do you fund the jails or transportation or other things, public health has come out on the very short end of the stick every single year. And that was sort of the basis of my question is, I hear people paying lip service to this from elected offices. It's been a long time since I've seen actual dollars flow or a plan laid out to effectively integrate things that we need to integrate. We have, in this agency, one half the number of public health nurses I had 10 years ago because we can't afford it.
Well, I think that's a fair comment, but I think, you know, we all have a responsibility to try to hold elected officials accountable. I think it can be very hard at the local level to, there are some very difficult choices, and there are some particularly difficult choices that are being made now that are going to be much harder for state and local government, given what's happening in the economy. That said, I also think that, one part of our recommendations in here is related to what the federal government can do to motivate states and localities to invest more. And one option that we put forward is that since public health is a shared responsibility between federal, state, and local governments, that the additional investment by the federal government should in some way require a match by state and local governments, so that while the federal government makes the majority of the investment, that this will be a motivation to get greater investment from states and localities.
Thank you.
I'm showing no further questions.
Okay. Well, with that, I would like to thank Bill and Al for joining us and thank all of you who are on for joining us. And feel free to contact us if you need have any additional questions. Thank you all. And
thank you.
Have a good day.
All right.
Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's conference. You may all disconnect and have a wonderful day.